This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, the Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. Let's just jump right into it right now because there's so much going on. I mean, there's the playoffs,
everything is happening tonight,
as Bob Cole would say, or as he used to say when he was on the air. Let's start with, as we're recording this podcast, Bill Peters may or may not be announced as the new head coach of the Calgary Flames, but
he will be announced.
And if somehow it's someone else, we'll be pretty embarrassed, and who cares? So what do you guys think of this hiring, first of all? And also, do you think it was the right decision to let go of Glenn Gullitson?
Oh, yeah, I do think that. Yeah, absolutely. And is this a good decision? I mean, he seems to be the flavor of the month that a lot of people think is a really brilliant coach. And he did do an awful lot with not, you know, with a limited, you know, limited resources in Carolina. I think it's a pretty good move. It gives them, I think, a new look. I think it gives them a new attitude. I think he'll deploy these players a lot differently than Glenn Gullitson did. But I also think that in order for Glenn Gullitson to be successful in Calgary, they're going to have to make some changes. They're going to have to change some personnel there because there are some guys there that don't play the game at the pace that Glenn Gullitson, or sorry, that Bill Peters wants the game to be played at. And if those players stay, then you're just putting a square peg in a round hole. So I think they're gonna have to get faster. They're gonna have to get deeper forward. They're gonna have to, you know, and we know the guys that we're talking about here, right? So I really think that they're gonna have to make some changes to their personnel if they want to give Bill Peters a chance to be successful.
Does one of their names rhyme with Joey Gower?
Might.
Yeah. And I like the move a lot for Calgary. Brian Costello, one of our senior editors, has actually done some very nice blogging on this since he is our West Coast expert.
Yeah.
Not even West Coast.
Yeah.
Just
yeah, I think he watches every second of every Calgary game.
Yeah, he's from out Calgary.
And then rewatches it.
Yeah, he's from out West, so he knows the score. But I want to take it from a slightly different angle, which is I'm a little surprised that Carolina let Bill Peters go. You know, we knew he had the out clause, and you have a new owner in Tom Dundon coming in, obviously had conversations with Peters, and those conversations could not sway him from exercising that out clause. And maybe the chance to coach in Calgary was just too good for Peters, and you look at some of the weapons that he'll have at his disposal, including a legit number one center in Sean Monahan, albeit a young one, but one with that potential, a franchise goaltender in Mike Smith, and a really nice decor that just seemed like it wasn't being deployed the correct way under Glenn Gullitson. Maybe that was the answer. But when I look at Carolina now, it's like, oh man, maybe they hit a home run with their next head coach, but it just seems like a team that needed more now has a little less because, as you said, Ken, Bill Peters, a lot of people like him, the way he coaches the game. He's had success internationally with Team Canada. A tough loss for the Hurricanes.
It's interesting, too. I mean, from Bill Peters' perspective, I understand it. It's kind of like going to the big leagues. No disrespect to Carolina, but just from a market standpoint, it's exciting to be going to a Canadian team.
I mean, Mike Babcock left Detroit to come to Toronto, right? Like it was no reflection on Detroit.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's just more of a compliment to Calgary as a market. But the one thing I don't understand is like, okay, what are the hallmarks of Carolina? Really good possession numbers, really good defensemen, and struggle to get the saves they need. And what's the hallmark of Calgary? Awesome possession numbers under Gullitson. Yeah. Great defense core. And Mike Smith, I mean, he was great in the first half, and when he got hurt, when he came back from injury, he wasn't the same goalie.
And he's 37, so, and he's got 1 year left on his
Are you getting the same? I mean, at least according to the numbers and the structure of the team, it feels like Peters is a similar coach to Glenn Gullitson. It's a team that generates a lot of shot attempts, but not necessarily a lot of goals to match the shot attempts. At the same time, I mean, Calgary has more high-end talent at forward than Carolina does, right? Carolina doesn't have a Johnny Gaudreau.
Yeah.
Or probably not even a Sean Monahan.
No, they definitely
And I do, I mean, the Flames strike me as a team that They also got pretty unlucky this year. Matthew Tkachuk got concussed and TJ Brody got concussed. Mm-hmm. And they were in pretty good shape before that Mike Smith injury. Sean Monahan's entire body got taken apart at the end of the season.
Four surgeries. Yeah, yeah.
So they could have been there. And I think getting a new head coach, maybe, and like you said, Ken, if they're going to get a little bit faster, because now we know copycat league, Vegas is the team to chase in the West, as we saw what happened to the LA Kings.
Right.
If they get faster, I mean, I could see this team getting back in the playoffs, no problem.
Certainly.
Another big piece of news, the Minnesota Wild, I guess they didn't call it a firing officially, but
did not
Chuck
renew.
Fletcher has been...
He's fired.
He's been sent to the copy, kind of like the guy in Office Space. He's been placed in a different room, and, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So for all intents and purposes, it's a firing.
Yeah.
Do you guys like the decision? Was it time?
I think it was. You know, but it's really interesting. I mean... He had, what, 8 years?
Nine years.
9 years, and that track record of success, it's a results-oriented business, and he didn't have the results. So, you can say, just based on that, that it was merited. The thing with Chuck Fletcher is he did everything but win. You know what I mean? Like, he did everything but win. You know, they had, like, the Devan Dubnyk signing. Are you kidding me? Eric Staal, great signing. You know, they've got great young, got fantastic young prospects.
Mm-hmm.
I don't pin the Parise-Suter signing on him. I think that was ownership. You don't make that kind of signing as a general manager. The owner drives the bus on that one. And really, I mean, Suter's been worth it, and Parise hasn't, not by no fault of his own, because he's been injured most of the time and dealing with a lot of stuff. So to me, I mean, you look at it, he built the franchise to do everything, but they just didn't have the success. And so you look at a couple of things. First of all, I think you look at the coach, Bruce Boudreau, who, you know, I mean, he's a great coach, but has not had playoff success. Wasn't able to get Washington out of the second round, wasn't able to get Anaheim out of the second round, and wasn't able to get Minnesota out of the first round. Got him to the conference final. I'm sorry. Right. Yes. Okay. You look at that, and I think you also look down the middle. Mikko Koivu, your number one center. He's a good player.
Yeah.
Is he a number one center?
He's not Sidney Crosby. He's not
Coach. So I think you look at that, and that's a bit of his downfall. But I mean, I think it's a culmination of sort of bad luck and you know, a couple of things going sideways. And he could have been, you know, they could have been off to the races.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think that there were some trades that really put them back a step. And part of it is being in that competitive, Western Conference, where, you know, Minnesota was always kind of going for it.
Yeah.
You look at the Martin Hanzel trade, that blew up in their face.
Big time.
And then you look at what was ostensibly a cap move, moving Marco Scandella and Jason Pominville for Foligno and Tyler Ennis. That was a disaster.
Yeah.
And then, of course, handling the Vegas expansion draft, right, where they gave them Alex Tuch and Eric Halla.
Yeah, I think that one is the tipping point.
Yeah,
that one's
exactly
the tipping point. And if you hear Chuck explain it, which he does, they wanted to keep their defense core together.
Yeah.
And they had to do that in order to keep both Dumba and
Jonas Brodin.
Yeah, and Jonas Brodin.
Yeah.
So that's a calculated move, and you go up to the plate and you swing and you probably miss, I guess. I mean, both Tuck and Hall have been outstanding for Vegas. So that, I think that one, you kind of look and you go, you know, okay, that's it. That's the tipping point, you know?
Yeah, I feel like they could have, like, this would have been the year that they said, like, eh, let's take a back seat. Maybe we can trade some of our veterans. And I mean, contract-wise, it's tough because of the sort of contracts they have. But I think I would have preferred for Fletcher to look at the landscape and be like, we ain't getting out of the second round for sure. Yeah. Maybe not even the first, just based on our division. Let's see how much we can get out of some of the young guys. Like, let's really give Joel Eriksson some ice time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Luke Cunningham got hurt, so there's not a lot you can do about that. You know, they did get Jordan Greenway up there, so that's helpful. But, you know, I wonder how much more they could have done in that respect and maybe gotten a higher pick, maybe even a lottery pick. But it's all hindsight.
Yeah, right? And then he really would have lost his job.
Well, I suppose so. But if that's the plan, to take a step back and say to Craig Leopold, like, look, we're not good enough, and I'm not pointing fingers, but I had to sign Parise and Suter to those huge deals, and that took up a lot of my cap space, and that's why Marco Scandella's not here.
Right.
It all just came together the wrong way.
Yeah.
It's a series of unfortunate events, and I do think last year was their window. That's why they made that Hanzel trade. They took the shot, and at the time, they felt like they had this cornucopia of exciting prospects they could spare a first round pick in that trade. Mm. But what's happened since then, like you said, Ryan, Luke Cunningham tears his ACL. Joel Eriksson-Ek, who a lot of us thought was a major Calder Trophy candidate, at least in year one, the ceiling might not be what we thought it was. Mm. You never know. I mean, he could be...
Didn't really get the chance.
Yeah, didn't get the chance, but you could argue that other guys, you know, they...
But you make given your chances. You make your chances.
You take your opportunity. Yeah, yeah. Kirill Kaprizov, great prospect, but he's not coming here for at least another season, right?
Mm-hmm. His
contract doesn't expire till 2018, or the end of 2018-19 in the KHL.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, what you thought were reinforcements aren't looking quite as good, and you've traded away that first round pick. So suddenly, the Wild's future, even in our Future Watch magazine, they tumbled a lot year over year in the overall prospect rankings.
Yeah.
And I do think, I mean, whether it was Fletcher's fault or not, I mean, the 13-year deals and Parise's health, it's hamstrung the Wild. Like, yes, they got lucky, or they I don't want to say lucky, but the Eric Staal signing really worked out better than anyone could have expected.
Well, sort of the Dubnyk was lucky, too. Yeah. I mean, they were desperate, and they plucked them, and it worked out, right?
But they haven't had, I mean, for so many seasons now, the Wild have not been able to be a real player in free agency because they're just hamstrung every single season because of the contracts they've given out to Parise and Suter. They just can't move anymore, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like this is as good as the team could have gotten in the Fletcher era.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their shot, especially last year. They missed, that's that.
Yeah, and, yeah.
So we've got the playoff matchup set in the West.
Righto.
And I think we should
start No reason why it's not starting now. That drives me crazy. Like, why not just start them? Why not start the series?
Well, especially
they're going to be sitting around. Like, these teams are going to forget how to play hockey. Like, a couple of guys will have to retire in the interim.
Vegas-San Jose could be in, like, game four by now.
Yeah, really.
Is it just me or is the Stanley Cup final about to be played in
Central
Division?
It absolutely is.
The top two teams in the NHL points-wise, and I think just our general opinion of these two teams as well.
Yeah.
Thanks, NHL. Love the playoff format. Thanks for the Stanley Cup in round F and two.
But you're getting it. Okay.
So you have to
balance that against the fact that, you know, if it went the other way, you might not get this series.
Yeah.
So, and that's the whole reason why they're doing it, is so that you get these series. You may get them in two. Sometimes you get them in one, like last year, but you're getting them.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. So, Winnipeg, Nashville. Winnipeg was as impressive as any team in round one. Nashville, it took a little longer than expected, but they did make quite the statement in game six, blowing Colorado away.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you like? I guess we'll start on the offensive side of the puck. Who do you think has the edge, Nashville or Winnipeg?
I think Winnipeg does, big time. I think Nashville's defense is, as vaunted as they are, is going to have its work cut out for it. Handling those big, skilled, fast, scoring, physical, everything forwards that Winnipeg has, and you know, I mean, as good as Philip Forsberg is, I don't know, you know, that their top end guys match up. And, you know, the fact of the matter is Nashville's best line in round one was, you know, Bonino between Sissons and Watson, which is good, because they were really good. They were 5-goal different, like they were 5-0 even strength and all that stuff. But that was your best line.
That's not what you pay those guys for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you look at Winnipeg's forwards, and we know Nashville has, you know, one of, if not the best defenses in the NHL, but one team that gave them problems this year was Winnipeg because they kind of have everything as well. They're, you know, formulated a little differently, but look at Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele and, you know, Paul Stastny essentially having, you know, a depth role on this team. There's just so many weapons that you really can't escape when you play Winnipeg. And, you know, like you said, you know, Philip Forsberg, top gun for Nashville. That's great. And Nashville has some pretty good depth as well. But their offense is more sort of, you know, all-encompassing where it involves activating the defense a lot. And it's all well and good. But if we're just talking about forwards and offense, you got to give it to the Jets.
Yeah, I think you guys have nailed it. I mean, especially the Jets' power play is devastating. And I think it's the one, I mean, I think Nashville is the best team in the NHL. And I picked Nashville to win the Stanley Cup. But the one crucial edge the Jets have over Nashville is big time star power.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's something. It's no disrespect to Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, but I mean, Patrick Laine is already scoring more goals as a teen than Forsberg and Arvidsson have ever scored.
Right.
So it just sort of puts into perspective the difference in star power.
And to me too, Matt, I'm not sure that Winnipeg's defense, the way Dustin Byfuglien's playing, is that much of a downgrade from Nashville's defense.
Right. Yeah, they're no slouch.
Yeah.
Josh Morrissey too.
And you know what? Like, Matthias Ekholm scored a goal in game 6. That was the first and only goal that Nashville's defense had in that whole series in 6 games. Where is their scoring defense, their offensive creating defense? You know,
I think it's coming though. I think you have to worry about it, right?
Yeah. But it's gonna be if this is not like it's too bad because like Winnipeg Nashville, like it's like the marquee effect isn't there, right? Like Winnipeg Nashville, like somebody in Cleveland isn't gonna know how good this is going to be.
Right.
But this is going to be must
watch. Oh, it's going to be unreal.
It's going to be must watch. You've got the two best teams in the league, separated by 3 points, probably the two rowdiest, most raucous fan bases in the league, in their home ranks. Mm-hmm. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be physical. It's going to be fast. It's going to be nasty. I just think it's going to be great. I wonder, it's interesting, you know, like, you talked about Nashville taking a little bit of time to get through their series and finding their feet and stuff. I wonder if the Avalanche did Nashville a favor.
Yeah, maybe.
Or if they wore them down. Because that was a nasty, like that was a dirty, nasty, nasty physical series.
Yeah.
So you could say, well, maybe they wore them down, but then you could say, yeah, they were just a warm-up act for the Jets,
the
right?
Appetizer.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's going to be great. And what's awesome is the first game that the Winnipeg Jets win in this series, we assume they're going to win a game, will be the first time ever the Winnipeg Jets have won a game in the second round.
That's
ever.
Wow. It's interesting. I mean, from the defensive breakdown, I think it's pretty clear we're still going to give the edge to Nashville. I mean, they're deeper and their decor, their big four, it's peerless, right? But in terms of goaltending, to me, it's a very fascinating matchup because Pekka Rinne has been the best goalie in the world this year. But Connor Hellebuyck, I mean, nothing he's doing is a fluke. He was always supposed to be a star.
Yeah.
He gets pulled
one lousy
in game 3.
Yeah.
Then he's like, eh, no big deal. Shutout.
Yeah.
Two in a row.
So
based on the momentum and also just the resolve that Hellebuyck showed, do you think, can we say safely that the Preds have the edge in goaltending, or is it kind of a wash right now?
I'd say it's a wash.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a wash because you know, when you look at the body of work as opposed to what he's doing lately, then they play off against one another. And I would say it's probably a wash.
Yeah, it's a fun contrast because you have youth versus experience, but you've got two big guys. You know, I mean, both have fantastic seasons, Vezina caliber, and you know what? I mean, Rinne, he had his ups and downs last year in the playoffs, but they still made it to the final, and they still won games in the final, and you look at Hellebuyck, and he was the X factor this year, not only in the regular season, but going into the playoffs, we said, well, can he be the guy? And as you said, a little bit of adversity, but he has shown that he can be the guy, and that's all Winnipeg needed.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I think it's time to bust out our coins and make your series pick. I'm going to say Preds in 7. I mean, it's tempting to go with Winnipeg because they're so impressive in round 1, but I'm gonna reason that Colorado did the wake-up thing.
Okay.
It's kind of like Apollo Creed when Plucky Rocky was hitting with body blows, and then Creed had to just really dig deep and find the eye of the tiger, if you will. And
no, that was the other movie.
That was Rocky 3.
Rocky found the eye of the tiger, you bonehead.
No, but Creed, the eye of the tiger existed in Apollo Creed, and then he later taught it to Rocky and Rocky 3, and they ran on the beach, and it
Perfect.
Was wonderful.
Yeah.
Where was I?
Oh, yeah.
So Nashville learned how to battle through a tough situation in the trenches.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen their fastball yet.
No.
And they're the more experienced team. The Winnipeg's going to get into deeper waters. Like you said, they never won a round 2 playoff game. The expectations are going to be much higher.
Yeah.
Again, it's I'm looking for any little tiebreaker here because it's going to be so close. But I'm going to say Preds in 7.
I am going to succumb to the temptation that you talked about. And I'm going to pick Winnipeg in 6.
In 6?
I think Winnipeg is the unstoppable force right now. And I don't know that Nashville, you know, I mean, they do have that extra gear, but they didn't show it in a couple of ways. And I don't know. I just think that You know, Winnipeg's just going to overwhelm them, I think. They're just going to overwhelm them. And, I mean, Colorado should not have been that tough and out. They shouldn't have been. Mm. Simple as that. You know, I mean...
One-line team.
I mean, and Andrew, they were playing Andrew Hammond. I mean, come on. Like, yeah. I mean, he was great in Game 5, but they shouldn't have been that tough and out, and they were. And, you know, if you subscribe to the theory that, okay, this is where we took them too lightly and now we mean business, then there is some merit to that. But I'm looking also for some tipping points, and I just see Winnipeg as being a team that just seems to be on a mission.
Yeah, I like Winnipeg in six as well. When I look at it, and it's funny because, you know, for our playoff preview, I did a story about why Nashville would beat Tampa Bay in the Stanley Cup. And when I was talking to a bunch of NHL executives, you know, the caveat was, of course, like, assuming they get past Winnipeg in the second round. And when you look at that matchup, like, the Jets played Nashville very well this year. They're not afraid of the Preds.
Yeah.
And there's just so much mojo going on in Manitoba right now. You know, Ken, you mentioned it with the crowds. I just think that Winnipeg, you know, like, they've got a mission. And... you know, Nashville, they got to the final. I know that's amazing motivation that you want to get back, but it's tough to do. And I agree. I just think Winnipeg's rolling right now, and I think that they're going to surprise Nashville.
Yeah, I think if Nashville thinks that the Colorado series was physical and nasty, they're in, it's going to a whole other level. I mean, to get knocked around by Nikita Zadorov is one thing. To get nailed by Dustin Byfuglien is another.
Pray for Victor Arvidsson.
It's a different one, so...
The other, for the sake of our collective ego, though, we need to pick Nashville because our Jets cover says that they're the 2019 Stanley Cup champions, not 2018.
They might win it. They might win it again, though. They can
but
win
it'll
it
be cooler
again.
If they win for the first time.
Now. No, they'll win this series and then they'll lose.
So. Right.
Yeah, speaking of who they could lose to in round three, it's a good transition. I mean, Vegas coming off a sweep against LA. San Jose looked really impressive. I mean, both teams came off sweeps, right?
Very.
Both teams looked shockingly impressive in round one. I mean, we did pick Vegas and San Jose to win their collective series. Or at least, I picked Vegas.
I actually picked LA.
So just patting myself on the back.
There you go.
Good for you. Well, that makes up for the fact that you said they wouldn't have 10 wins by New York.
Yes, it does.
I did
the math and it works out perfectly.
Yeah.
So it's tough because both teams were so impressive in round one, but who do you like in round two? I guess starting with on the offensive side of the puck.
Well, I like San Jose better offensively right now. I mean, they outscored Anaheim 16-4, and Las Vegas only had 6 even strength goals in that series, 7 total. So, I mean, it's not like they lit it up, you know? So I think offensively, I like San Jose a little bit better, which is, and it's interesting because, okay, Joe Thornton's definitely been ruled out for game one, but they're talking about, you know, the possibility of him coming back at some point in the series. I think we have to contemplate the possibility that for this series especially, Sharks might be better without Joe Thornton.
Yeah.
They might be better without him because he's going to take up 20, 25 minutes of ice time every game, and he's not fast to start with, and he's coming off an injury. Mm-hmm. Against these guys, like that, they'll just be skating circles around him. Mm. So I kind of wonder if it's not better if maybe Joe just sits on the shelf for a little bit longer as far as, you know, San Jose's chances are concerned.
Or maybe do you make him a fourth liner to begin with, play him like 10 minutes a night, power play, defensive zone faceoffs, that sort of thing. Yeah. I totally know what you're saying. I mean, offensively, I'll give San Jose a slight edge, but it's interesting because it's been a high-scoring playoff so far, at least anecdotally. I haven't crunched the numbers, and Vegas is the fastest team in the league. They do it by collective. I mean, they've had some fantastic scorers this year, led by William Karlsson. Obviously, Jonathan Marchessault has been great as well. They have a lot of different weapons.
Yeah.
You know, San Jose's got that great top end, and right now they're scoring, but I think it's pretty close just because anybody could be the hero for Vegas. I think we're at that point where we have to acknowledge that, like, anybody can step up for that team. Like, Alex Tuck could get a hat trick, and I wouldn't bat an eye.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot more offense coming from Vegas. I'm not sure if it was by design that they kept the Kings to low-scoring games or it's just how it turned out, But I could see the floodgates opening in this series.
I think they will open because, yes, they had trouble scoring against LA, but you know who else had trouble scoring against LA? The entire NHL. LA won the Jennings Trophy. They were the best defensive team in the NHL.
Right.
And Anaheim, Sharks are facing Anaheim, but the Sharks are facing Anaheim without Cam Fowler.
Yeah.
And forced to play some of their, I don't want to say scrubs, but, you know, lower down the depth chart.
They're not Cam Fowlers.
Yeah, they're not Cam Fowlers. So I expect that Vegas is going to have an easier time, and I think their speed's going to be a problem for the Sharks, just as it was a problem for LA in the end.
Yeah.
The only thing is, I do worry, I mean, Jonathan Marchessault and David Perron were pretty banged up late in the season.
Yeah.
So part of me wonders if they're not quite physically right, and that's why we saw as a whole less offense from some of their best forwards in round one. So that could be a factor, but I still overall, because Vegas just has the ability to roll every line wave after wave, and you never know which guy's going to burn you.
Yeah.
Matchup-wise, I think they're very tough for any team to face.
Yeah.
So I still do like Vegas a little bit better offensively.
Can I throw one thing?
Yeah.
Since March 1st, San Jose played 23 games, had 54 even-strength goals. Vegas played 22 games, had 37 even-strength goals. That's almost a goal a game difference.
Yeah, wow. That's a good stat.
Between the two teams. And I mean, San Jose is, if you believe in momentum, San Jose's obviously riding it, in a big, big way. But I think the other thing we have to do here and get out of the way here is Vegas isn't an expansion team anymore.
Right.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah,
they're not
label them that way.
Okay, because in the first round, I thought that I mean, obviously Vegas was the better team during the regular season. They put up all those points. They were great. I thought that the Kings were going to be able to come into that series and go and say, like Kopitar would turn to Quick and say, hey, remember that time we were down 3-0 and we came back and won the series? Remember that time we won 2 Stanley Cups? Remember that time we played Chicago in 5 overtimes and in the conference final and won? And then, you know, Jonathan Marchessault, you know, turns and goes, hey, remember that time I played for a whole bunch of teams? Like, I just thought, you know, I just kind of thought that would be their comeuppance.
Right. Mm.
But it wasn't. They didn't care. It didn't even faze them. It was like LA, you know, go away.
Even the fact they won close games is almost more impressive. Because you think those are the kind of games that would go to Jonathan Quick.
Right. So win, lose, or whatever, what happens in the series, Vegas doesn't lose. The fact that they're an expansion team doesn't even factor in because they're not even one anymore.
Yeah, they're an expansion contender.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at goaltending, right, Marc-Andre Fleury is back to top form, like playoff Marc-Andre Fleury, the one that people used to make fun of in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
that guy's not there anymore. This is like vintage Marc-Andre Fleury. This is the guy you want between the pipes that can stare down Jonathan Quick and say, I've got as many cups as you.
More.
Well, as a starter. And now you go in against Martin Jones, very good, capable young netminder.
And he's been lights out too.
And he's been lights out
he's
too.
He's been very good.
But again, Vegas doesn't take a back seat in that category.
No.
Yeah, to me, goaltending looks like a wash because Jones and Fleury were both so outstanding in round one. On the defensive side of the puck, I mean, you got to give it to the team that has Brent Burns and Mark Edward Vlasic. I think that might be the single biggest advantage at any position.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, almost no team other than maybe Nashville can match those two. It's having those two anywhere in your defense
court. And Paul Martin, who couldn't play in the NHL this year, is now back at his old spot with Brent Burns.
Yeah, he's like,
playing really well. Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, if the Sharks are going to flex a muscle in this series, it's going to be especially, I mean, Vlasic's ability in the shutdown game, but Burns' ability to sort of control the play.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I mean, LA had Drew Doughty, and yes, he missed a game, but Doughty also has the same ability to control a game and a series.
When he's not losing his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. To me, San Jose does have an advantage there, but in terms of handicapping the overall series, I still like Vegas. I think I like Vegas in 7. It's going to be another close one.
I'm going to go with the underdog in this one. I'm going to go
you
with
mean San Jose?
San Jose.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Who's the underdog?
Yeah, let's clear this up. Yeah. I'm going to go with San Jose.
I'm going to take Vegas in 6.
Vegas in 6.
We'll get Vegas again.
We got time for a couple reader questions. Last week we only did one. And we apologize for that, for shortchanging you on the reader questions.
And I haven't heard these yet, so I have no idea what's being asked. So if I don't know what I'm talking about.
Lies.
Just figure it out. Yeah.
Okay, this one comes from, I can't see the name because it's cut off on my screen right now. I apologize, but you know who you are, person out there. The question is, if Columbus loses in the first round, what happens to John Tortorella. With the disclaimer being that by the time you're listening to this podcast, Columbus could be out or they could have forced a game seven. But either way, let's talk about Torts.
I think he stays.
I agree.
Yeah, I think like if and I actually blogged on this, you know, about Pierre-Luc Dubois and the great rookie season he had and the fact that he's already on the top line with Cam Atkinson and Artemi Panarin. I think if you look at Columbus, like next season looks very promising. You know, you've got your number one center now. A healthy Alexander Venberg slides into that number two role where he is perfectly situated. Seth Jones, I know a lot of people are already saying he should have been a Norris finalist.
He was I voted him second.
Well, there you go. He was on my ballot as well. So, I mean, he had to be very close.
He was a beast.
He was probably like the fourth guy on that ballot.
Yeah.
And then Zach Werenski, he's only going to get more dominant as well. So, with a couple of little tweaks here and there, I think Columbus has an excellent lineup. And I think Tortorella, like, he's got a pretty good, like, sense of what this team is and what they need to do. They had some guys that had some really bad luck this year and big slumps. I think it's going to turn around for them, so I think he deserves at least one more season.
I say he's going to be back, and I say it for one reason, and that is win or lose this first round series. His act hasn't worn thin yet.
Right, exactly.
True. Yeah, it hasn't worn thin yet, and that's when he'll lose his job.
It's just like
They're successful or not, when his act wears thin and the players are tired of it and they play like they want to get him fired, that's when he'll lose his job. And it'll happen. It will happen. But I don't think it's this year.
He's the modern Mike Keenan in that sense. He has a shelf life. But you can always tell. I mean, there's only been one in the playoffs so far, one really angry Torts presser postgame. And I think you know when the firing's coming. It's the season where he has like 15 of those.
Yeah.
Starts shooting his reporters. Yeah. That's when you know he's
Sorry, guys. I don't have any answers for you. I'm not going to talk about
it. Yeah. People keep asking and he walks away. So I agree. I think he's got one more year. And I think Columbus might be entering a pretty interesting window of cup contention in the Metro Division.
Yep.
Because, I mean, it feels like Pittsburgh's never going to sag, never going to fall off. But, I mean, it happened to Chicago this year. It happened to L.A. a couple years ago. Eventually, just theoretically, the top players are going to age out. And I don't know if it's going to happen next year. But it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if, let's say, Pittsburgh finished third in the Metro next year. Or something like that.
Right. And then won the cup.
But I think Columbus might have a window where they could win the Metro next year, right?
Yeah.
So, because they have so many players who are ascending, and Artemi Panarin is, I think, a lot better than anybody realized now that he's without Patrick Kane, just as good.
Yeah.
And just
they got to lock him in, don't they?
Definitely.
Like big time.
I think, how many years does he have left?
I think he only has.
I think he has several left. It's 6 months.
Oh, does he?
I forget.
Okay, well,
I think he does, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think we seem to all be in agreement then that Torts has got another year. Yeah. I don't think he has more. Yeah. I mean, if Columbus doesn't go further next year, then round one again next year. But, okay, good. And one last question here. This is from Zach Ahears. I'm going to say Ahears. Sorry, Zach, if I pronounced it wrong. Never seen that name before. Should the Avalanche pursue someone like John Carlson in free agency this summer? If not him, then who else? I was actually writing about the Avs cap situation recently, so I'll start with this one. Joe Sakic does have a lot of money to play with, even though, I mean, Mikko Rantanen's eligible to sign an extension July 1st, so he's going to get a mega deal, like maybe David Pastrnak kind of money.
Yeah,
So he has to, Sakic does have to plan for that, but at the same time, I feel like this isn't the year for Colorado to take its aggressive shot. I feel like they want to see one more year of progression. Their defense, we saw growth from their young D. I don't know. I'm not so convinced that the Avs are a contender for the Cup next year that you want to lock in a John Carlson to an 8 year. Like, look what happened to the Rangers with Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yeah.
They were so sure, and then all of a sudden they have Shattenkirk on that big deal, and then they're rebuilding the next year.
Right.
So I think Colorado's got to be careful and play conservative one more year before deciding to get aggressive.
The only thing is, though, is you can't look at it as a one-year thing, right? You're looking at it 3 years down the road, and is John Carlson going to be that guy that brings you to the promised land in 3 years? He sure as hell looks like it right now, the way he's playing this year and in this playoff series. I you know, you talked about one-line team, right, with Colorado. I look at the Avs defense, and it's pretty good. it's damn good. And so I just wonder if it wouldn't be a better idea to maybe keep supplementing the forwards and get some more depth in there, get some more experience in there, get some more, you know, make yourself a little more difficult to play against in that respect. Because I think their defense is actually, it's pretty well built.
I don't agree that it's good. I think it's actually bad.
Really?
But you got Cale Makar and Connor Timmins coming. So yeah.
Samuel Girardi's going to get better. And, yeah. you know, yeah. yeah
I mean, but I still would rate it in the bottom half of the league personally this year.
Yeah. Duncan Siemens probably shouldn't be in the NHL.
Well, he's not.
Eric Johnson's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they should chase anybody this summer. I think they have to be prepared to take a bit of a step back in that division and say, like if they miss the playoffs last year or next year, I think that's okay. Like Cale Makar, we know he's going back to UMass, so that's fine. He'll keep developing. Connor Timmins probably needs another year before he can really take a shot at that blue line. But I think they just need to keep developing, keep an eye on how things are going, keep some cap space open, and then next summer, maybe that's when you make your splash and you get that great internal competition where you want Cale Makar and Connor Timmins and Samuel Girard to have to play their way into a top four role or, you know, at worst, a top six role. Like, you want to have a guy in there that's putting up a bit of an impediment because you don't want roster spots just handed out. And I think right now, Colorado's a decent team and they had a great year and it was awesome that they got into the playoffs. I think it was very important for the franchise. But they can't kid themselves, and they can't Minnesota Wild it.
Or they can't
do
what they did the last time and think they're better than they are.
Yeah, they're not better than they are. Yeah, yeah, they're probably a little worse.
They are what they are. A team that would have just missed or just made it.
Exactly.
And could make some noise in the first round.
Yeah, they were one.
That's what they are.
They were 1 point and one game away from missing the playoffs. They need to remember that this summer.
Yeah, that's fair.
But the future is bright.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and enjoy the start of the Stanley Cup Final. I mean Central Division Final between Winnipeg and Nashville.